Why, hello there, friend. It's the Nerdist Podcast number 245. Matt Myra, Jonah Ray, and I will be coming to a couple cities, possibly near you. We're going to be in New York October 12th. That's a Friday at the Best Buy Theater Plex thing. We're going to be performing a Nerdist Podcast live there. We're also going to be at JFL 42, the Just for Laughs wing in Toronto, at the end of September. So if you go to jfl42.com, you can get information for tickets for that. Or if you go to nerdist.com/calendar, you can get information for tickets to our show in New York. Say, TV owners, the Nerdist television show is going to be on BBC America this weekend with a tribute to time travel. That will be Saturday, the 18th of August, BBC America, 10, 9 Central. Please watch that, because we'd love to make more of them. And it's fun, and we like you. I'd like to thank Amazon.com. for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. It's really simple. If you want to support this show, go to the episodes page on Nerdist.com. Episode number 245, there's a little colorful banner under there. And you click on it, and you just shop the way you normally would to buy whatever sort of weird stuff you want to, whether it's male grooming products or color forms, or I don't know what you shop for, but whatever it is, whatever you buy will trickle back to the Nerdist Podcast, and you'll be supporting us. If you don't have the ability to see us live. Or you could do both if you want to be a super fan. I am very excited about this episode because some people you see them and you go, yeah, I'll bet that person's really cool. And she fucking totally was. Carla Gugino, who's been in some mind-blowingly great movies and is so fucking awesome. She's friends with Connie Britton, who was also on the podcast earlier, who's also fucking awesome. So it makes me really happy that two fucking awesome people are friends. A lot of F-bombs in the intro. A lot of F-bombs. Necessary? No. Fun? You fucking bet. So I was very excited to have her on. Political Animals is the show. That's the miniseries that she's on, USA, which I believe is on Sunday, the 19th of August. Or if you happen to miss that, then just find it somewhere online, Political Animals. And also, she talked about a really great movie called Hotel Noir that she's in with a fantastic cast. I don't know exactly what the release date is, but that's why you have the internet. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably an advanced internet user. So you could probably figure out a way to look that up on the interwebs with whatever web crawler or Lycos or Alta Vista or whatever it is that you use to find out stuff, information. So here we go. Nerdist Podcast episode number 245 with the super, super, super awesome Carla Gugino. Unnecessary Italian intonation on that. Not intentional.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Yeah. Or if I want to swear at Chris, I hit the cough button.
If you would, but I can still read your lips,
and they can usually hear me still.
Then yeah, and so you really don't try to hide.
Doesn't
it
do anything.
Yeah. So the cough button is if you're a coughing enthusiast and you're right. Just like it's been like 10 minutes since I've had a cough. That's what that button.
I would hate to go to the annual coughing like enthusiast gathering.
That would be an awful.
That would be a terrible gathering.
So these mics, you have to kind of get right up on them. All right, then. They're class rating mics, and we're already recording. Proper. How about that?
Oh, I love it.
It's seamless, Carla.
It really is.
This is how podcasts work.
Just shove microphones in your face.
When you're doing radio, you got to sit there and wait. They're like,
true.
One more sec. We got to do a segment with Jimmy the Dickhead. We sent him to a tampon convention, and we're doing crazy radio. And
then you get that live read for 1-800-MATTRESS.
Exactly.
And then the last desk off for
and
savings.
Then traffic.
Yep. On the threes.
Yeah. And so this is very informal and casual and conversational.
I love it.
So first of all, it's wonderful to have you on.
I'm so glad to be here.
You would never remember this. Years ago, I saw you at a party at Connie Britton's house.
Yes.
Who I've known for over a decade.
Totally.
And I was too nervous to say hello to you. Because I didn't know what to say.
That's ridiculous.
I was like, hey, fuck, that's not how you say hi to someone.
I think any party at Connie Britton's house, you should know that you could say hi to anybody. I mean, you know, we're like, it's family.
I guess so. But as much as, look, I do this, I'm a stand-up, I have no problem talking in front of people.
But I have I have slight, fuck yourself, man. But I have a moderate amount of social anxiety
in those
types of situations.
Don't you not trust anybody who doesn't, though, on some level? Like, people who are super overly confident at parties
they're after
are
something.
Kind of concerning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why'd you just hand me a drink? What'd you put in it? Hey, nothing. We're all friends. No, we're not. I don't know
exactly.
You.
Exactly.
So are you still friends with the Connie Britton?
I am still the best friends with the Connie Britton. She is totally kicking ass right now. She's in Nashville singing up a storm with the
not
the,
like, the city, the show.
Okay, and the city.
Oh, I didn't
as
know.
A matter of fact. She's doing double duty. She is in Nashville shooting Nashville. With like T-Bone Burnett producing her music.
Oh my
and
God.
It's
they shot
bananas.
Cheers in L.A. You don't have to go to Boston. I'm just saying.
I've seen the bar in Boston where they shot Cheers.
I think she'd be really excited for you to go and say that on her behalf.
By the way, I think Fraser Crane's doing a great job on Boss. I don't know.
Yeah, he's doing a great job now controlling all those people.
Connie.
Did you see those people hanging from meat hooks in the ads?
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
I just saw that. I was like, what is that on Sunset Boulevard?
If that billboard said "Don't fuck with Frasier," I would own that.
But it just says "Boss."
It says "Boss,"
and then all of his.
Someone please Photoshop that for me. Don't
See,
fuck with Frasier.
Because you know the subtext, Matt, is that when you have a dickhead boss,
yeah.
It's like you're hanging in a meat locker.
It's true.
It's very cool. It's nice, actually. It's a relief in this heat.
Yeah, but. Let's talk about you, Carla.
So much rather talk about
Kelsey Grammer.
Yes.
What was your favorite Kelsey Grammer vehicle?
Oh, yeah. That's a great question. Down Periscope.
You know what? I actually haven't seen Boss, but I hear it's amazing.
I've seen clips of it, and it does have that. It's obvious that after the Glenn Close
damages
after damages, they're like.
I feel really good that I came up with that.
That was great.
Thanks. That never happens. That won't happen again.
They were like, well, we'll test you throughout the show and see if we can stump your television trivia. But they were like, Kelsey, you needed damages. Ted Danson was on damages. Come on. Let's make your damages.
He does seem like he's got that. Well, you know better than anybody that's like comedians and comics always have. There's rarely one that I've met that doesn't have like a good underbelly of darkness. So maybe that's a good use of his talents in a different way.
Have you ever dated a comic before?
I never have.
Very, very serious.
Yes.
Like very, or at least the ones that I know, like we fuck around publicly and then we get home and they're like, oh, let's analyze everything.
Exactly.
Let's
balance,
beat everything. Exactly. Well, I haven't uncovered every molecule of this situation yet. So let me just go back and replay it in my mind a million
exactly.
times. Did you ever, cause you are funny. So did you ever do any kind of comedy? And when you're,
you know, what's weird. And you know how this is, like as an actor, you end up getting, constantly either put in some box, just because human beings do that. I don't even think it's a bad thing. I think it's just we see somebody in something and we assume that's kind of like what they do. And then you see until you see them do something else. So when I first started, I mean, I did The Son-in-Law with Pauly Shore.
I remember The Son-in-Law. The Son-in-Law sparked a complete pantheon of Pauly Shore fish out of water flicks.
Yes.
But a disregard for the public.
That they did not. I mean, I'm not going to be mean. The movies didn't get better as they went along, but I actually really liked Son-in-Law.
The Son-in-Law, I have to say, is a pretty, it's fantastic because I know I had a great time on that movie, and I do know that I know exactly who the fans are of Son-in-Law, which still come up to me all the time.
Oh my God.
And basically, you're like, if you're looking pretty stoned and like you're in college, you're going to say like, oh my God, I know you from, and I'm like, The Son-in-Law. And then I did Spin City, and that's when I met Connie.
I remember, yeah.
So what's funny, though, is that I haven't until, I mean, Entourage was fun in that way, too, even though that's not the same kind of comedy. But I don't get to do as much comedy as I would like is basically the shorter answer to that question.
It's kind of funny how the business, in an unspoken way, will dictate what it thinks you should be doing.
Yeah, it is. It's really amazing. And it basically, it's all up to us to kind of like keep continuing to surprise ourselves and therefore other people so that we can actually get shots at doing something that we might be really good at that people don't really think about, you know.
Bryan Cranston said the same thing sitting in the same chair.
Really?
Yeah, now I got a timeline. Now I got to talk.
He was
like,
sitting in that chair.
Why you got to ruin a moment?
I'm sorry.
I was feeling so special.
Hit your cough button the next time you want to ruin momentum.
Don't have one over here.
Hit your momentum ruiner button.
You can use my momentum ruiner button.
That's just my voice. I've experienced the same thing. I pretty much just gave up trying to get roles in films because I'm like, you know, it's easier for people to have me host things. And I love doing that. So I'll just do that. I don't give a shit.
You're really good at that. You've got many years to be continue. You know, it's like, you never know. You might get, it's funny. I was talking to Craig Ferguson. I just did his show recently and
we were on the same episode.
We didn't couch together. No.
But we were on the same episode.
Oh, this makes me so sad because I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah.
So, I didn't see you, which
obviously Chris watched it.
I didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad. No, his show is always so fun because he's so fun.
Yeah.
But we were talking about it because I was saying he did a little thing as himself for Political Animals. And I was like, because I always want to act with him. And I was like, you know, this was like as close as we got so far. You were really good. He was like, what do you mean I was good? I played myself. but I think he was he's a really good actor too. And then he's become successful at it's like something else. But
he's another one, like comedian, you know, probably has that.
Has
that gene there too, a little bit. Do you feel like you have that as an actress, or are you feel like in general you're pretty happy? You know, is there a dark side?
There's definitely a dark side. I'm always intrigued by those people who are really happy all the time, because there are a couple of people that I've met in my life. I'm like
Mormons.
Exactly, and they're all in Book of Mormon. I really am. I wonder, there must be something going on under there, but maybe not. No, right. I'm definitely, you know, somewhat of your typical artist, I guess, in that way.
Well, we're so surrounded by people of our ilk.
Yeah.
That we, you know, like where are you from originally?
Sarasota, Florida.
Hey, Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota, Florida.
Nice.
That's where I was born. And then I lived in Northern California for a long time. You know, I lived with my mom in a teepee.
Don't glaze over that.
I know. I was going to say, I've talked about it too much because it's all, you know, once you mention it, I just thought you probably knew.
Now, was it an actual teepee or just like a teepee, kind of like a, was it more like a yurt? Or?
It was actually a full-on real teepee.
The skin of a buffalo?
I think it was like more of a canvas sort of scenario.
All right,
was more like, and then it had, you know, the big tall pieces of wood, but it was really big. We had two twin beds in there and a fire pit and a little stove, and it was in Paradise, California. We lived with a bus full of gold miners who were mining for gold.
Sure.
I had a kidney operation, and my mom wanted it to bring me somewhere like very away from the world. And so I lived there for 6 months with her when I was like 5 years old.
That is unbelievable information.
When I think kidney operation, I don't think teepee gold miners.
You know, this is, my mom was kind of a creative thinker. I mean, she came from a family that my grandfather was like designed airplane engines for GE. And she's Susan. And then there's Wendy, Nancy, Cindy, and Mark.
Oh, wow.
So it kind of tells you that 1970s to the teepee. The teepee you go. You know?
Wow. That's pretty incredible.
But why did we? Oh, yeah. So that's where. But in terms of being raised, so then I lived in Northern California for a period of time. And then, yeah. But I started in Florida.
You started in Florida. Sarasota. Sarasota. Is Sarasota actually up in the panhandle?
It's on the Gulf. It's right on the Gulf.
Right on the Gulf. Yeah.
There's an area called Longboat Key, mm-hmm. which is like a big tennis place. And I had to take tennis lessons when I was a kid there, and I hated it. But a lot of big tennis stars have come out of there.
We didn't have to play tennis in the teepee.
Exactly. You took me away from my teepee. And tennis.
Do you live in a house that weirdly resembles, does it have a point at the top? Like, I don't know.
I can only live in places with a point and pee in the river. it was, you know, as a kid, it was amazing. But yeah, I do think that mostly I'm getting better at it. But it's also because I've been doing this for more than half my life, probably as most of us have. But I used to be really tortured when I wasn't working and really happy when I was working, even if I was playing a totally tortured character.
Sure.
And now I feel like there's some time in my life that I'm happy just kind of being, you know, but that's taken a long time.
And I think some of that also just comes with, you know, getting out of your 20s and you sort of just being a little more comfortable with yourself.
For sure. And you just also figure you're really lame if you can't figure it out eventually. Like, there's so much time that we're not working.
I know, but you know, what's weird is I think even if you were to talk to people who were 80,
right,
I think some would still feel like, someday I'm going to figure this shit out.
Well, totally.
Because you're still the same person.
No, it's true.
Unless dementia takes you.
It's a fair point, Matt.
Maybe that, I've never wished for that. And yet, as you say it, it sounds like some sort of relief.
The brain starts splitting in half.
But I definitely think there's something to, just at a certain point, you go, you know, it's not that bad. I think maybe you just run out of energy.
Well, exactly.
You just
can't obsess. You're right. And there's also the thing, I think, as a really young person, there's this kind of feeling of like, I must be tortured and I must, you know, like somehow that's akin to being talented or creative.
Or depth. It's like
exactly.
Depth.
And then you sort of realize, oh, no, it's actually pretty good to just kind of live your life and then give, you know, and then give that stuff to your work. I don't know. Yeah, it's an interesting... It's the plight of the artist, for sure.
Have you typically dated other artists, or do you date outside?
No, I have typically dated other, like, I think the whole actor thing is a tricky combo, but it is, but I would have a hard time, I think, dating someone who wasn't in,
right.
in this realm
Didn't
at
understand.
All, just because I don't think they would get it.
No.
Yeah. Because it's so weird. It's so hard to get. It's like when you say, hey, I couldn't call. I literally worked a 17-hour day.
Yeah.
Somebody else is like, what do you mean? What do you mean? Of course you could have called. You're like, actually, you know, there was literally no time.
But not only that, but you know, if you're working on something that requires an immense amount of emotional
right.
output, and then you come home and then that person just doesn't understand why you can't just leave it at the office.
Yeah.
You're like, this is not a tax return.
No, that is for sure true. And it's funny, and I notice that even more when I'm doing stuff on Broadway, when I'm doing 8 shows a week, because that is actually, you think you have a lot of free hours in the day, but your whole day is in service of those 8 shows.
Oh, yeah.
And especially because I've just picked some real doozies, so I've done, like, really, really intense stuff where I'm like, I have chosen something where I'm sobbing 8 shows a week, you know.
You don't think about that when you want to get it, and then you get it, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a lot of yelling and
you're like,
crying.
Of course I want to do a classic Eugene O'Neill tragedy. Of course I do.
But just for like a week.
Exactly.
So you can say you did it.
Yeah. But I also think, and it sounds, I know, a little, I don't know, silly somehow, but I also think that if you really love, like, kind of acting is like the love of my life in a way, you know, aside from the people that I love. And so I think it's, in a way, it's that thing where if you're not getting to do that or be with that person, or, you know, you have this feeling of kind of emptiness because it's
sure.
what you're... You know, like I'm so much, I need about 3 days off, and then I'm, you know, I'm like, ooh, I need a vacation. And
yeah.
About 3 days later, I'm like the horse at the gate.
Are you ready? Gotta get out of here.
Exactly.
It's like Vegas. You can take it for a couple days, and after that, you're like, I get it.
Oh,
I just fucking,
God.
I just gotta get out.
I shot there once. I did this movie, Race to Witch Mountain. And
yeah, you did.
Oh, yeah.
Race to Witch Mountain.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
And it was me and Dwayne Johnson, The Rock.
I love The Rock.
I adore him. And we've actually done 2 movies together. But, it's also really funny being there. But anyway, that was like, we were there for a good 7 days. We were shooting or something. And I honestly thought I was going to jump out of a window if any of them opened.
They don't.
Which they don't.
For that very reason.
Exactly.
Because it would be raining sad people all day.
Exactly. But there was one time, I don't know what, this is so random, but it just making me think of it. We were there and we were shooting in one of the casinos. And this woman came up and, you know, many women obviously come up to Dwayne and are like, I want a picture. And dudes, I mean, everybody. And, but this woman goes, hi, could I have a picture with your arm? And she literally didn't even care about his face. She just wanted a picture with his arm.
Sure, why not?
And he was like, sure, go for
it's
it.
It's a fun Instagram.
Yeah. Well, he's got the Brahma Bull tattooed on there.
Yeah.
You don't want to get next to that thing. He's all covered now.
Taking a deep dive on The Rock's tats.
Listen, I know well.
He is enormous.
Well.
He's so, you have no concept of that guy until you see him in person. You're like,
yeah.
you're a fucking, he's a monolith.
He is truly, yeah, it's incredible.
He's charming too.
And such a sweetheart.
He really is. I want to see him do more comedy.
Now talk about being funny. That guy is fucking hilarious.
He was the best. He was great in the Get Shorty sequel.
Yeah.
He really was genuinely like, I just wanted to see him that whole movie.
He is so funny. And actually in, one day on set of that, of Race to Witch Mountain, we were doing something and the director, Andy Fickman, and he had worked together a couple of times before. And so Andy all of a sudden just started saying like, try it this way, try it that way. And he did basically what ended up being like a stand-up comedy act that was unbelievable, completely effortlessly. Like it really is. It's a part of him that I hope I hope he gets to do more of it as well, because he's really good at it.
Well, that's what he did when he was wrestling. They don't really script all that stuff. They say, hit these beats and go out there.
Right.
And he was always the funniest one.
That's true. And he is. He has that kind of command of, we were down in Comic-Con, and, you know, you do those panels with like 8,000 people. And it was interesting because I was doing that and also for Watchmen that year. And so I was in two of those panels. And the personality of those rooms is so different depending on what you're. Yeah. And, I mean, he had them wrapped around his finger in the most genuine way in about 30 seconds. It was amazing to see.
Yeah, you always know if so. He's one of those guys that every time you see him, you go, I bet I could be friends with that guy.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I actually, if he would be open to that. But he does have that persona of like,
if you would just meet me, we'd be friends.
Yeah, exactly. And I just started to
scream that as you drive by.
Yeah. Why are we not friends? I'll call you. I'll email you. TheRock@gmail.com.
Oh, I bet it's something like that. The Rock at AOL.
TheRock@BigProdigy.net.
By the way, has an amazing voice, and he sings like Sinatra.
What, are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
Chris just got mad at more talent.
Yeah. Fuck that guy. We got to have him on. We got to get him to sing at the end.
You really do. He sang me Happy Birthday once, and I was like, That was incredible.
How is Comic-Con for you? You didn't go this past year.
No, you know, what's funny is I went so many years in a row because of things like Sin City and Watchmen and Sucker Punch.
Sure.
And, you know, like there's just a lot of things that, and I did a sci-fi show called Threshold.
Yes.
I love Comic-Con, I have to say. I think it's just, I guess I love any place where a bunch of people go who feel as passionately as those people feel about what they love.
Like,
you know, also because, and you know, the Nerdist.
Yes.
But we're all, I mean, everybody's a nerd about something. You know what I mean? Everybody is. So to me, I feel like it's become such a big business thing to do now. And that's the only thing that's a little bit different than when I first went down, which is it does now feel like, I mean, I don't know, random, comedies or things that you're kind of like, why are you going to
Comic-Con? It feels a lot like commerce.
So exactly. So it's become a little more of that, which I like less, but I love the people dressed in the costumes coming up and asking questions about, like, you know, really thought out, because Watchmen also was a graphic novel that people sort of hold in the highest esteem.
The very highest esteem. And some said it would never be a film.
I know, and it isn't such an extraordinary, and we felt so much of a duty to sort of do right by it, and that was such a, and I feel like Zach did a phenomenal job in regards to, you know, really adapting that thing, which was so hard to do. But they had the best, it was so much fun down there.
And you know that every time you go, like whenever you do a role like that, then you're going to see a bunch of Silk Spectres next year.
Which is great. Yeah. No, and I was on the press line one day and someone was like, what does it feel like to be a Comic-Con icon? And I was like, I didn't know I was one, but it feels fantastic.
It's good.
Not that I know. I feel amazing.
Have you ever actually gotten to walk the floor? I don't know if you could walk the floor without being pulled apart.
No, you got to wear a disguise and then you can walk the floor as much as you want.
Did you do that?
I did do that once and it was really fun. I have been on the floors like signing.
Yeah.
You know, they do those sort of panels
that booth.
Are on the floor.
Yeah.
And that's fun. I mean, definitely being ushered around behind the scenes and then just showing up for those panels is the least fun part of it.
Yeah.
Getting down, you know, getting in there with everybody is really great.
Do you walk the floor at all?
I did.
Can you walk the floor anymore? That's my question to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I can almost not walk the floor now.
Yeah. I mean, it. But it doesn't. I don't know. It's fun.
Yeah.
I like
it. Yeah.
I mean, and in general, I mean, it's sort of like.
They're all nice.
Yeah.
Everyone that comes
That's
up
what
to
I
you.
Mean is like, it's actually a great group of people who've come for this event, you know, who just want to say hey pretty much and you know, maybe science.
I mean, Adam Savage who can walk the floor even less, like you know, he's like, you know, you put your head down and you just walk from A to B and you know your people are respectful and they're fine, and you know, it's there's so much to look at. I feel like the only bummer part about walking the floor is that I constantly get elbowed in the face because there's just, it's so crowded now.
All this walk the floor made me think, like, I feel like we're talking about, like, we're on the runway together.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I just imagine the three of us, like, strutting down some sort of, like, can you walk the floor? I can still walk the floor. I'm not sure if I can walk the floor, but I think I can walk the floor.
I'm good. You know, it's just 1 foot in front of the other is all it is.
And if you put a book on your head, it's even harder.
Then it's really fine. Your fashions are puerile.
I did start when I was 13, I took a John Robert Powers modeling class.
Oh.
And you did have to walk the floor, let me tell you.
Did you, you know how to do the strut?
I can kind of do the strut. The thing is that I'm short, so I ended up getting recruited to New York by Elite Petite.
Oh, that's adorable.
Elite Petite. Which is funny.
Oh.
But yes, I did.
Piccolo
I did
models.
Piccolo yes. models. Is that what you just said? Yeah.
Elite Petite model.
He's pretty. He's a pretty Italian. In again. He's a walk at the floor.
Yeah, the modeling business is not a nice business.
No, I didn't last for very long.
They will tell you exactly, like, your shoulders aren't symmetrical. What? Now I didn't know I was supposed to feel bad about
exactly.
that. Thank
Scoliosis,
you.
I'm sorry.
You are imperfect in so many ways. Count the ways.
And by the way, you know, short is that diminutive. You know, my mother is a diminutive Italian lady.
Yes.
You know,
is she?
Yeah. She's, I don't even, my mom's like 4'10".
I didn't know you were Italian.
Well.
What's your combo?
It's a weird.
Your combo.
My dad's side of the family is just like Anglo mutt. Like okay. It's just some sort of muddy Scottish, Northern right. English kind of thing. And then a lot of redneck. The rednecks, you know, they settled Alabama, like they came over from right. Northern England, Scotland, I think just sort of settled Alabama and then the Ozarks and all around there. And my mother has a very interesting lineage. Her father is first generation American. So my great grandparents immigrated.
Right. Okay.
From Italy, from Napoli and from Sicily. And so disrespectful to my great grandparents. This is how everybody talk. Like Father Guido Sarducci. And so my
or Antonio Scarpacci on wings.
Right. So
don't forget him.
So it's so my mother my grandfather is Italian, was Italian, and my grandmother was half Cherokee Indian and then half white.
You have like the coolest combination.
I have the craziest. I actually could have applied for financial aid with my Indian blood. And I did not because
of the pro bowling tour?
Not because of that. Because I was worried that I would go in and be like, yeah, I'm an eighth Cherokee. And they're like, fuck yourself in the face. White person.
I was just going to say, and also you look really white.
So super like, white, like the whitest person in the world. It almost feel like, really, we're going to take all their land and I'm going to take their financial aid. Maybe I'll take a pass. So I let it go.
I do love the whole, that's not dissimilar, although I don't have the Cherokee, but my mom is English, Irish, French, that all that sort of group. And then my grandmother was from Sicily and my grandfather from Rome.
Nice.
Roma. But when I went as a kid, I just remember it was, and I'll never forget it because it was so, it made such an impact on me. They were like, you know, someone said, what's your name? And I said, Carla. And they were like, Carla? And I said, no, Carla. Carla? I said, Carla. Carla Gugino. It's Italian. Oh, Carla.
Carla.
Carla Gugino.
Carla.
And I was like, I want to live with you.
Did you speak? Do you speak at all?
I don't. And it's really bad. I feel shame about the fact that I don't speak Italian.
No, you don't have to feel bad about that.
But, you know, Carla Gugino, I mean, I do have the name that should, I should be able to be like, see, of course.
Well, maybe if Rosetta Stone would sponsor the podcast, we can get you a copy.
Exactly.
Those Rosetta Stone, that Rosetta Stone software is spensivo.
Well, it gives you the gift of a language, which is priceless.
All right.
I just feel like you have to kind of commit.
You're practicing.
Please sponsor us.
Practicing for the commercial already. You have to commit to it.
You know, you got to commit to, I just didn't realize that.
That's all right. Italian was my language in college because I took Latin all through high school. Mm-hmm. And so it made any of the Romance languages a little bit easier to learn.
So you do speak?
I speak a little.
That's so cool.
But I can't, if I go to, what happens if you go to Italy is that all of the regions have different dialects. And so when you go to one region and you start saying what you said in the last region, they go, oh no, that is not how you say it. It's like this.
Right.
And then so you just constantly feel stupid if you travel around Italy. And then once someone starts talking back to you really fast, you're like,
exactly.
You just run away.
Like, I know how to do it when you speak really slowly.
Yes.
That is always the thing when you go to any foreign country, because I speak a little bit of French and I feel really confident before I get there. And then as soon as I get there, I'm like, je parle un peu français.
Désolé, American stupid.
Un bibliotheca. I need to look up.
Exactly.
I think. What are you saying?
Bibliotheca. Dove la biblioteca? Biblioteca qui vicino. We used to watch these crazy language labs before the internet. I think we're exactly the same age.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, I did not. The internet may have been available to governments when I was in college, but it was not available to students. And so we actually had to go to language lab and sit and watch tech check out tapes and just watch, you know, Italian language tapes.
It is weird to think with our age, like how we're relatively young in the big scheme of things, how fast.
No, we're very young.
But I am starting to feel like I'm a little bit like, when I was a kid, we used to have phones in our houses. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, soon, I mean, anyone under 20 does not have
heavy,
a phone in their
smelly
house.
Phones.
Exactly. And you couldn't be smelly phones.
And if you wanted to talk and be on the phone and be in another room, too fucking bad, you had about 3 feet of.
Like, there was a point also with, you know, tapes that, like, my boyfriend had given me or whatever. I saved them for a while because they were tapes.
Right.
And now I'm like, I'll never, ever. I don't even have it. There's no place
there's no
to
way
put
to play
them
that.
Oh, you don't have your cassette tape? Or, you don't have a cassette? You're a big star. You don't have a cassette player in your car? Oh. And if you wanted privacy on the phone, you had to like take the phone into a closet and shut the door and talk in darkness.
And then also, like, remember as a, I mean, I don't know. I feel like, you know, the boy had to call and like talk to the parent and then be like, I want to talk to Carla or whatever it was. Now you're just like texting, you know, I mean, everything is, but I feel like this has all happened in our lifetimes, which is a relatively short period of time.
Oh, well, no, but you know, like, you know, I feel like when I'm dating someone, I will still call the father and ask for permission to text pictures of my penis to his daughter. Because I just respectful. I'm from the South.
That's just you. That's
and I just
want to,
I want to be respectful.
What did special effects legend John Dykstra say about that?
I don't know. He probably would have been like, let me take that in a lab. I can make that look bigger. Because he's special effects.
Yeah.
What do you, did you leave Spin City after one season, two seasons?
Just one season.
One season.
Yeah, a little bit less than one season. That was a funny situation because.
Oh, it was a situation comedy, so.
No, Matt, she's talking about the meta situation.
Well played.
Well done.
It was this really strange thing. I loved doing that show, and I made so many friends from that show. My character was a reporter, as you may recall.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, we realized as the show was continuing that the reporters cannot be go into the mayor's office. It's actually literally they can't be in the office.
No one looked that
this
up.
This was something that nobody thought about.
That is weird.
Which was an issue because I also didn't want to be the girlfriend in the apartment because the whole kind of. Setup was much more like a, you know, His Girl Friday kind of Tracy Hepburn sort
way
of
go,
scenario
Bill
between
yeah.
the two of them.
Look it up.
So there were like all of the, anyway, it was an awesome parting. I had a great time doing it, but it was sort of short-lived. And I think they also realized, and I couldn't really disagree, that in a way it was kind of better for Michael's character to be single. Like there were just a lot of things that were set up in that was hard to continue in the way that, like, the pilot was really great in regards to sort of the balance.
Yeah.
And then there wasn't a lot of places to go with it, so.
That's so, you know, there's so many unforeseen factors that can strip you of your job in this business.
I know.
I got a sitcom. It's on the air. It's a hit show. Everything's great. What do you mean reporters can't go in the mayor's office?
I know, it's so true.
Why does he have to be in there then?
And it was one of those things too where, and for better or worse, I feel like I'm always thinking about like the, you know, the bigger picture. Probably sometimes I should be like, you know, fighting for my own self, but I was like, I don't know, I kind of agree. Like, I don't know where we go with this character. I don't know if I can't go into the office. We only have so much we can do.
Yeah.
And
then it turns into Welcome Back, Cotter, where at the end of the episode, he just tells you a joke.
Exactly.
That's it.
And I'm like, oh, you're funny. I think we actually had a couple of those episodes.
I'll see you next week.
But no, Gary David Goldberg and Bill Lawrence. I mean, they're, you know, it's like, I just saw Michael not too long ago, which was so awesome. But yeah, and then I went straight from that. That was like such a wild time because I went from that to I did Snake Eyes, this Brian De Palma movie.
Oh, yeah.
With Nick Cage and Gary Sinise in Atlantic City, which is one of the most depressing places on the planet, actually.
Well, then you've never been to Reno.
I have not spent a lot of time in Reno. It's true. Yeah, so that was such a fun. I think I literally had like a week in between or something.
Brian De Palma, Jesus Christ. How do you, so what? That
guy loves his crane shots.
His shots, the opening of that movie, I have to say, is honestly worth checking out again because it was all one reel of film at that moment, which was about 9 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Without a cut. And so we rehearsed it for like 2 days and then shot it all in one fell swoop and it was 11 pages or whatever of screen time. following Nick and, you know, going through the whole thing. And I came in at like minute 8 and it was so stressful because you knew,
you had to come in the exact
you knew if they had gotten to you that everything was okay and you were the one who was going to fuck it up. So basically I'm sure I wasn't thinking about anything in character other than please let me get to my seat, say my line and have it be okay.
Hey, what do you got? I'm sorry, Brian, what is my motivation exactly. again? I'm just not feeling it.
And that was a movie also where I had a squib hit my pinky finger and, you know, damage it. It's very dramatic.
Oh my gosh. Are you all right?
I'm okay. I still have it. It's here.
Oh my God. I didn't mean to bring up a painful. Have you really dealt with this yet?
I don't know if I've gotten over it. that pinky finger will never be the same.
I don't
even remember which pinky finger it was, so it's clearly fine.
Yeah.
How do you get into the, you know, you work in television, you go work in film with like one of the biggest directors in film, but, and just sort of talking about like being at parties and not the confidence thing.
Right.
Do you feel that when you're on set or are you pretty good about, no, I'm in this and, you know, I can just put it all down and.
You know, it is funny. I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm my own harshest critic.
Oh,
so
sure.
I'm always feeling like I want to be doing better.
Yeah.
And so therefore, even I did this movie called Righteous Kill with Bob De Niro and Al Pacino. And a lot of people say, like, were you terrified to work with them? And 50 Cent was in it too. But most of my stuff was all with Bob and Al.
You made this sound like a deli.
I know, totally, right? But the truth of the matter is when I thought about it, I was like, no, I was so excited to work with them, but I wasn't really nervous to work with them. I was just nervous to do what I wanted to do with the role.
Oh,
I was nervous to, you know, I wanted to deliver what I wanted to do. And I think that always, my own personal insecurities with myself actually make it so that I think less about sort of wanting to impress someone else, I guess.
Oh, that's good.
Not that I didn't want to impress them or whatever, but I do think that there's something to be said for being your own, you know. Your own sort of
that's a bad headspace to be of, like, trying to impress someone.
Well,
because then you're not doing
your
intentions are off.
Exactly. And you're not actually you can't be creative in that state, you know.
No.
And I think if it's a good director, like, you know, I got to work with Ridley Scott on American Gangster, or certainly Brian, or I mean, I really have been so blessed to work with some amazing directors. I actually feel like that makes me, of course, want to be better, but also it makes me feel like I'm in good hands.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, the worst thing is when you have to direct yourself, which we have all had to do when you're in bad things,
yeah.
And you're like, oh, wow, oh, shit, I know more than this director. Like, I'm really bummed, which is, I don't like that position, you know? I don't want to know more than the director.
Because you can't really.
Then you're sort of directing yourself, and I feel like you can be good, but you can't be great.
Well, and it's hard, especially if you're trying to direct yourself, but you're not the director because you don't know. You only really kind of have yourself in context.
Right.
And so it's a weird. Have you ever had to take someone aside and be like, you know, maybe I should.
I mean, I've had those conversations where I'm like, we're not getting. If you don't get this piece of coverage, I don't think people are going to understand the story. You know, those kind of things where you feel like, I know it's not my place to say it, but I kind of have done this long enough that I know that to be true, you know?
Do you even direct?
I know.
No,
I don't. Producing, which I've done a little bit of, I would like to do more of, just because I love putting people together. Like,
yeah.
I love the idea of going, like, these people would be really great in this context. But I think directing just seems really hard.
It seems like a pain in the ass.
It seems like so much to think about. And I just feel like I'm not, maybe one day there'll be a story I feel like only I can tell. But at this point, I do feel like I'm not. Someone else could do it better than me.
Pinky squib. It's just the whole movie. You can just build it up like Titanic.
Exactly.
Just 2.5 hours of movie, and then the big CG
totally.
Pinky squib scene. And then just a, you know,
exactly.
Celine Dion song fade to credits.
Yes.
There are, I guess once you work with a couple of really big directors, you probably go, you know, I think I got this. I think it's not that, because, you know, it's just like getting experienced anything. At a certain point, you go, well, if the worst thing that happens is, you know, for one take, I don't do a good job.
Right.
The production's not going to fall apart.
Right.
Everything's
right.
going to be fine.
Right.
Obviously, if you've worked with that many people, you know, you probably got something going on, and you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I also feel like it's kind of our job to, like, jump off the cliff, so to speak, like, creatively. Like, it's our job to kind of, like, take the risk and then fall on our face and then go, okay, that didn't work, let's try something else.
Sure.
But if you're trying to also control the whole thing, you can't do that.
You can't. And my hope for most people, particularly creative types, is that they would start to realize you know, especially if they've done something long enough, there's probably more of a safety net than they realize.
Right.
And if they just kind of trusted that.
And don't you feel like, I mean, I feel like the best moments you usually find are weird mistakes or something where.
The best.
You know, I mean, if you set out to do, if you do exactly what you set out to do, you probably have missed something. I remember someone saying really early on, and I always thought about it, is like, if you know exactly how to play a part, you should let someone else do it.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And I kind of think it's true.
Because you want to be able to sort of organically discover along the way, right?
Yeah, like it's about sort of that one, that element of the unknown that you're, don't you feel, I mean, I don't know because I've never done stand-up, but I would think that it's the coolest moments are when you start feeding off, like when you go down a road you weren't expecting.
Oh, or, yeah.
You know, right?
That well, that's why, like, I'd say like 30% of my sets are always just talking to the audience because it makes the material. It gets me into the material slightly differently, but it's also fun for me to talk to people and sort of play off whatever's happening. But yeah, some of the best moments, it's actually really hard to follow when a mistake happens, when something weird happens, and then you somehow pull out of it.
Yeah.
It's hard to go back and then start doing your jokes because you're like, well, this was all a shared experience.
Exactly. Yeah, I've had that actually with, you know what, I've had that with, you know how sometimes you'll be at some, I don't know, something where you're saying a speech of some sort, and you've decided to kind of own some of it, and like, you know, something's badly written, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna, you know, I'll put this in my own words. All of a sudden, then when you go back to the text that's written, it's like much more baldly, like, wrong,
you know? A total departure.
You're like, I actually should have stayed with the really badly written thing or gone all the way to the other side, because the half and half makes it really apparent.
Listen, I think as long as you're honest with people and go, see what happens in improv, and then you go back into the speech that everyone's totally fine. My worst fuck up, my biggest fuck up, I used to perform with I still do sometimes, but I had a musical comedy duo with my best friend Mike, and we had this whole song that was built around a video that we showed where the conceit was that it was a live via satellite thing, and we're interacting with it and it's going really well, and we start to get into the song and I accidentally kick the plug out of the projector, so everything just goes and had to stop the song, plug the projector back in, wait for it to load up, and then fast forward through all of the parts we'd already done. But it was the best.
It made it.
It was the best part of the show.
Yeah. No. Definitely. I do think. I had a movie at this movie called Electrolux. It premiered at South by Southwest, and you know, we have like the packed. The awesome theater. I'm just forgetting what the name of it, and I've been there so many times. It's like this great old, beautiful theater.
Right off Six, right?
It's right on the heart of Austin. Yeah, it's like right around, exactly, just off of Six. What is that called? Anyway, it was like packed to the gills. The screening's going great, and all of a sudden, picture goes out. And it's kind of stylistically, the movie does a lot of different things, so I think people initially thought it was part of the movie because my voice was still going in that moment, but the screen went black. And Sebastian Gutierrez, who wrote and directed it, all of a sudden, of course, he knows. He goes running up to the booth. Anyway, they had a problem with projector. The movie stopped playing. And he got up on stage to try to sort of, like, you know, alleviate it while they were trying to fix it. And it turned into this, like, 20-minute stand-up crazy thing that kept the audience there. Ultimately, the movie ended up getting sold kind of based on, you know, like, that it had gone well so far, but then the attention, like the movie would have never gotten that amount of attention if that not happened, but it was the most nerve-wracking night. But
exciting.
It was like that, you could have never planned it, and it was...
Not only should you learn from mistakes, but I also feel like a lot of times mistakes can save you if you can approach them in the right way.
Right.
I think it probably... would have been awesome if you as actors had just gotten up and be like, well, we'll just act out the rest of the movie.
Exactly. Absolutely. No, we did get up on stage and then we were going to do something, anything. And then they were like, sadly, we cannot, or it was like a bulb. The bulb had burst. And so we had, that was it. That they never showed the rest of the movie that night.
Well, it's a good thing that theater didn't have a backup bulb to just screw into the projector.
I know. We were like, really?
Those bulbs are really bright.
It's the bulb. I buy two.
You can't keep two on hand.
Yeah, you can.
It's so bright.
No, we have the storage technology to put a light bulb on a shelf.
I don't think so.
I think I'm oversimplifying the problem. I may be oversimplifying the problem.
Have you spent time in Austin, Texas?
Yes. It's
a
one year.
Town.
Austin's a great comedy town. Towns with that are kind of centered around colleges are really good comedy towns. Austin, Bloomington, Indiana is a fucking great town. And so Austin, you know, there was one year where I think I went to Austin four times to perform. Like
there?
Yeah, it's great. It's been awesome a few times.
We did a podcast at South By a couple years ago.
Yeah, and then we were just there again.
We did a live show there again at the Paramount Theater last year.
Oh, it was Paramount. That's what it was.
The Paramount. Oh, it was the Paramount.
Exactly. Yeah, I've done like six movies down there, but now I just go down to hang out.
It's really cool.
Yeah.
The food's good.
The food is amazing. Yeah. The people are great. I love any town that like the motto is keep Austin weird, you know, which it's a little less weird than it used to be, which is unfortunate, but it's still got that good vibe.
No, it's got a good vibe. And it's, you know, the one thing that's hard for me about South By is that, I don't drink and I don't normally give a shit about being around people getting hammered, but South By a lot of times falls at the same time as St. Patrick's Day. And so it's just like it's just a little too much. I'm like, oh, okay.
I was down there 3 years in a row with stuff for South By, which bums me out that I didn't get to talk to you guys.
What the fuck?
Where were you? Bullshit. And what was happening? Where were
you? You know, I saw you at a party and I was too nervous to come up and say hi.
Again?
I don't know. You know what it is? I just feel like I've been burned so many times going up to people and being like, hey, I think you're awesome. And they're like,
Ian McKellen break you?
Oh, the Ian McKellen. I don't mind. The Ian McKellen story was not that bad.
Gordon Ramsay just called me fat man on Twitter. It was the greatest thing.
Are you serious?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What did you say to Gordon Ramsay?
And he said something about it. His sentence didn't really make much sense. But just the fact that I was kind of insulted by Gordon Ramsay on
that's how it is in Hell's Kitchen.
Excited beyond belief.
The Ian McKellen story is not that bad. Actually, it was. I moderated the Hobbit panel this year.
Oh wow!
He was totally charming, you know, on the panel. And then backstage, we're all taking pictures. And I just said, oh, my God, Sir Ian McKellen. It was such an honor to meet you.
Right.
And he just so as regally as one can hold their head, just kind of kept walking by. And he was like, yes, right. It was one of those. And so I'm like, you know what? He gets a fucking pass. You know, the guy's 70 something years old. He is knighted.
Right.
He's Ian McKellen. He does not have to stop and let me fanboy all over him.
Like how those moments really do take you back to when you're like 10 and you're so disappointed that you're not as cool as I wanted you to be.
I'll tell you. And this is someone that I know, you know, because I think he's in the Lauren Graham, Connie Britton friend circle.
Right.
Every time I've met Matt Perry, it's never gone well.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
We do have to rectify that.
Because I feel like maybe in my head I thought, oh, we'll be pals because I would always go up for the stuff that he would have gone up for.
Right.
Just like the quirky friend roles.
Nothing makes pals like competition.
Exactly. And and so, you know, I had this moment after moment with him. And most recently, I think like 5 or 6 years ago at Lauren's house, she was having a party and I went up and said something to him and he was just like, okay, it was one of those. I'm like, God damn it.
I've met him a couple times.
This is wrong.
And he's always been nice.
I think it's because maybe I was pushing too hard.
Clearly it's personal.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I would do with The Rock. I'm like, I know this guy and I are going to be friends. So I'll
be the mediator. I feel like I can make it go really well.
Are you setting me up on a friend date?
Just do what I do. Pretend not to care unless it's LeVar Burton.
Yeah, we had you ever watch Star Trek The Next Generation?
Yeah.
Okay, well, we had LeVar Burton on and Matt knows every episode back to front.
Surprising, right? When you look at me, you're like, fat guy with glasses. How would he know everything about Star Trek?
Just because Gordon Ramsay called you a fat guy doesn't mean have to.
Yeah. That was an honor.
I
would be like, yes, thank you, chef.
Please.
I'm trying to think of, there have definitely been some disappointments and that's just sad. You know who I was really excited to meet? And she was actually awesome, but I'll never forget it. Was when I was 16, maybe even 15, I met Jacqueline Smith. And I was so excited.
Smith.
And I was like, you're so beautiful. And she said, you're so beautiful too.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I love you. Jacqueline that
Smith.
Was it. That was all the only words she said.
Charlie's Angel and of the Jacqueline Smith collection.
That is true. Yes.
Jacqueline Smith. Who else? It's funny. There are some people who maybe even aren't super, you know, working a lot today, but just as kids, they meant more to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
That if you see those people now, like we just had Dr. Demento on the podcast, and Dr. Demento used to do this comedy radio show, this musical comedy radio show every week. And it basically exposed us like people in my group to like Weird Al and people like that. And, you know, we've had ridiculously famous people on the show, and then but still Dr. Demento to me is
was
like
the, yeah, I know.
Oh my God.
No, it's like in your DNA, you know.
One disappointment story.
Oh.
Come on.
From me?
Yeah.
I know, I'm trying to think about I know I have them. The other really awesome one, by the way, was just because it was so awesome, because I would have been so bummed if he had not been as cool as I wanted him to be, was Bono.
Oh.
That guy is so fucking cool.
He was?
On every level. And he complete, yeah. I also think you always feel like someone's going to forget meeting you. Someone that cool will forget meeting you. And we had met one time, and then I saw him, I don't know, through a mutual friend, like, couple months later, and went to reintroduce myself, and he was like, "Hi, I remember you, Carla."
Oh wow!
And I was like, "This is the most exciting moment of my
life." No, then you have to spin it and be like, "Oh, and you, what is your?"
And you're, see, that's what you do because you're funny. That's what I should have done.
No,
see,
but you know, but here's the problem with that, Carla. First of all, you're funny, and second of all, the comedy bits don't always work, and when they don't work, you have so much farther to fall because comedy bits are ego driven.
Yeah.
And so people know that when you're doing comedy bits, to a degree, you're being self-indulgent. And yeah. So when they don't work, then people, it's just like the Matt Perry thing where he was like, okay, it was clear that I was trying to be funny.
Right.
And it was a swing and a miss.
Right.
and then you just have this horrible tale of shame that you have to somehow tuck and walk away.
I wish I could come up with some. I'm really not trying to not say it. I cannot think of anybody right this second who I had that experience with, but I know I have.
But you,
sure.
But you also probably know that
Faye Dunaway was a bitch.
What?
I met her. She was not pleasant.
Now, are you confusing her with Joan Crawford, character she played?
No.
Sadly, that I have heard that before.
Oh, really? What? You met Faye Dunaway?
I've dealt with her a number of times when I used to work at the Genius Bar, the Apple Store.
Faye Dunaway brought her own computer to the Genius Bar.
She does, and she does not let you forget about
did
that.
Did she have pictures
Oscar.
Of? Did she have pictures of dicks on
you
her?
You worked at the Genius Bar?
Sure did.
Yeah,
I
for
just
5 years.
I didn't know that. I'm sorry that I didn't know that.
No, that's okay. I mean, I should have gotten my resume to everybody who comes on.
I just feel that those of you who work at the Genius, I really honestly am so in awe because I'm so not. I'm so bad with my technological devices. I just feel like I want to like, can we just spend some time together?
Sure.
And I just want to be more like you.
You know, Matt's not the only one here who knows about technology, Carla. Granted, he knows a little bit more than I do.
But you
I
know.
Just feel like I want to go spend like some hours just to be, because the problem too is that I feel like anyone, you know, like 18 or under, anytime I ask, I'm like, okay, good. Show me how to do this. There are 9 buttons that are pushed that they don't even say because they don't know. They're like, oh, yeah, you just, and then you push that one. And I'm like, no, you did 9 things before that I don't understand. So I feel like the Genius Bar people don't judge you for the fact that you don't know anything.
We're trained not to.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know you judge us inside.
Yeah.
But I appreciate that you don't actually.
Oh, these poor fucks and the abuse they take at the Genius Bar because everyone blames them for.
Come on.
Yeah, no, you don't take anymore.
In a year.
Now, but it's
on television now.
we're free of any kind of abuse in the world of television.
That's right.
But yeah, I mean, did Faye Dunaway have any? Did you scour her hard drive?
No, I didn't care enough to even bother. She was just awful. She was just like unreasonable things that she wanted done.
Well, what? Back your story.
Like you know, like data backups and stuff like that were just not something we do normally.
Can this software make me famous again? No.
No, Faye, I'm sorry.
Doesn't work that
Nor
way.
Nor can your plastic surgery.
Oh man, boy, what did this woman do to you?
I was going to say, she was
awful
not.
And is constantly awful, and I'm sure she still goes there and is awful to people.
Wow, that's pretty amazing.
I do feel like, I really feel strongly about what's always been a barometer for me is how people treat waiters.
Yep.
Like, yeah. I've gone on a couple dates, and when that person is an asshole to the waiter, you're like, I'm done. I mean, over.
Do you ever just get up in the middle of the date?
I don't think I ever have actually gotten up in the middle of a date, because then I feel that I'm like too, I just feel too badly.
Right.
Which is my own problem. But I think, I do really feel like people who are not, or only nice to the people they need to be nice to, which is unfortunately, you know, this town is sort of filled with that kind of thing, is the really evident. And I think it's also because my mom was a bartender, my mom was a waitress. Like, I don't, I don't have that gene, but I'm stunned by that.
You know, when you're in a situation like that and someone's being an asshole to the server and then you overcompensate, totally. Like, this water's really good.
Exactly. And you're like, and where are you from?
Oh, that's,
oh, that's such a lovely shirt.
Great. Oh, you're so awesome. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I wonder, boy, I would love to.
Here's a blank check. You tip yourself whatever you feel is appropriate.
You know, there should be a show where, or something, or a web show or something where you kind of follow, you sort of hide cameras on a date and then you can show them all the failure points. Like,
yeah.
Because when you go home, you're like, because I'm sure some of those guys are like, I wonder why, I mean, I'm awesome. How come Carla never called me again? Never having any inkling that it was because they did that and just being able to show them like, and here's where you're a piece of shit to the waiter. And here's where you talked about your car too much.
You know, what's really funny on this note is that, oh, my mom will be so not happy that I'm saying this, but I'm going to anyway because it's such a great story. And it was so to her credit. She, at one point years ago, with this, her husband at the time, it was not my dad, but her husband at the time, she was like, they kept getting in these arguments. And she was like, I am going to tape this and I'm going to prove that this is like, this is the dynamic that's happening. So she hit a tape recorder. They had dinner. They did the whole thing. He never knew. She went, she played it back, and she was like, I'm the asshole.
Oh, my God.
She literally listened to it. And
but
she
how
was like,
cool that your mom had
well,
that.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it actually, it was like, that's what's so amazing about my mom. I mean, she is actually so, I love that she did this in order to actually, like, admonish this other person. And then she was like, shit, like, I was totally, like, I totally set that one up. And I, you know, so you have to be careful when
well,
you do
that. Well, now she's
got to
think
point.
About it. Was she just acting for the tape
right,
recorder,
right, exactly.
Trying to get him to be.
No, I think it's even more genuine because she was so convinced.
Well, that he, yeah, that she was gonna sort of. But that's the weird thing is, don't you feel like that? Like circular arguments. It's always the people closest to us, you know, that you end up getting in those arguments where you're like, I don't know how to get out of this.
And you know when those usually happen? After 10 p.m. Never get into discussions about things when you're tired.
I could not agree
the
more.
The absolute worst time because your defenses are down and then all of a sudden you're just arguing to argue and it gets worse and then you got to go to bed upset.
And going to bed mad is terrible.
It's the worst. Yeah. And I think there's a certain...
I think that's a very good rule
it's,
to
it's
live
It's true.
By.
So many... I think if you were to map the data points of your arguments. By the way, we have nerds listen to the show. If you want to get scientific with your interpersonal relationships, map out the times that you have all your arguments, and I bet you would find a startling amount of consistency, and then you start to go, oh, maybe it's actually not about what I think it's about.
Yeah.
Guys, and then
I don't want to sound like I'm not in this conversation, but...
What's happening?
I just
right
won
there?
Him over. Gordon Ramsay's now following me on Twitter.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
This is such a big day.
I was going to take offense to you looking down at your phone quite a bit here, but now that I see
won't.
What's happening, I
don't
better.
Argue with him after 10
no,
p.m.
No, I won't.
How did you get Gordon Ramsay to follow you on Twitter?
I replied to him and said you calling me fat man was the greatest thing ever. Also, I went to steak this weekend in Vegas, and it was fantastic. And then I sent him a picture of the food that we got.
And then he
nice.
Followed you.
Boom.
Oh, that's good. Is he going to give you some tough love?
No, but I'm going to get him on the podcast.
Okay. Why we will have Gordon Ramsay on the podcast if you want him on the podcast.
We'll have Carl come back.
It's almost just as much your podcast.
I love to eat. I'm not a good cook, but I love to eat.
What did you just say?
What?
What did you just say?
Nothing. I said,
I want to hear that again.
I said it's almost just as much your podcast as mine.
Okay. No.
What?
That's a correct sentence. You didn't just say it. We all know it.
We are 50-50 partners in that.
No, we are. Okay. We are 50-25-25 partners.
We're 50-25-25. That's not unreasonable.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think that's unreasonable.
Have to say it. We
emotionally, we're all equal.
I don't know about that.
Okay, you're right.
It's really weird.
Yeah, listen, we're fighting in front of company right now.
I was figuring that was the other.
Poor Jonah. Poor Jonah.
He looks thin today, though, and
he would be happy to
diminutive.
Appreciating you. Yeah, he's 6'4" and like
Jonah's a tall. Jonah's the tallest guy you've ever seen.
Where is what happened?
Jonah
shooting something for the soup.
Jonah works on the soup. He's a writer on the soup, and so he a lot of times. He'll get last minute calls like, oh, we got to go shoot this sketch. And so he's got to go.
I just have something that I have to tell you guys, because I almost risked my life just a couple of days ago without knowing it. And
what?
It just dawned on me that it was so random that I just went down to Mexico with some girlfriends.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Which could...
This is going to end in a beheading?
Exactly. Or
prostitutes. Getting some prostitutes.
And I haven't had like a girl trip in ages. Eons. No, it was actually relatively tame, other than, you know, margaritas started at noon. But that's still... I mean, when you're in Mexico, what else can you do? No, I was obsessed with... I still have this problem with the fact that on the Pacific coast, they tell you you can't go in the ocean because it's too rough. It's too... You know,
sure.
Meanwhile, if you go over to like... You know, the Cancun side of things, yeah. Tulum, that whole area, the water's really beautiful and whatever. So, but you're on the ocean. The ocean's beautiful, but you're supposed to stay in the pool. And this has always seemed antithetical to me, and I don't understand it. So I went to the manager, and I was like, hey, can I go in the ocean? I can swim. You guys don't need to be responsible for it, but...
Hey, listen, check this out.
Listen, I was a body surfer. I dated surfers when I lived in La Jolla. I need to, like, you know, get
I'd
water.
Like to approach the drug cartel. You won't be responsible.
Well, it was also awesome because the manager at this particular place is... full-on Chicago blonde.
Okay.
Couldn't be more American, you know, and he's like the manager at the place. So I actually swim every day, and you're totally fine to do it, you know, just, you know, wait, officially I didn't tell you this. So I get two of my friends the next morning, wake up, looks pretty good. Oh, he goes, oh, and he said, but I did get bitten by a jellyfish today. Yesterday. No, today. I got bitten by a jellyfish this morning. So, and I was like, oh, what did you do for that? And he was like, oh, no, I put the vinegar on it and whatever. And I was like, okay. So next morning, go swimming. It's pretty rough, but it is, you know, like you can feel it's not that Caribbean water. Like it's alive, like
yeah.
The Pacific is, you know, it's like under currents and all that kind of stuff. But it was awesome. Fantastic. We come out of the water. I go and get a massage later that afternoon. I come back and they're like, so we talked to Daniel. That's his name. Did you hear what actually happened yesterday? And I was like, no. It turns out he got bit by a Medusa, which is like a really hardcore kind of jellyfish, like much less common. And he couldn't move the entire right side of his body where he got attacked. And he swam with one arm back in, at which point he put the vinegar on, which is what he had told me. And then that didn't work. So he ended up being rushed. Basically, he ended up being taken to the hospital, and they had to give him an injection of something. And so when I saw him, I'm like, dude, what? Why didn't you tell me that? And he was like, well, I mean, if I told you, he said, I swim every day. I was, you know, it's been like, it's 1 in 1,000 times it would happen. I knew I would scare you. And I said, I'm like, did you have someone pee on it? Like, did you try all the things, you know? And he was like, yeah, I have to say, like, the moment when you ask your friend to pee on your arm is when
yes.
you know you need to go to the hospital.
Yes.
So he went. But anyway, long story short, I was actually glad that he told me after, because I wouldn't have gone in the ocean. And now I feel kind of like a rock star that I actually
That's
went
pretty badass. But that's a Chicago guy right there. Like, yeah,
but isn't it totally
couldn't move the right side of my body. I'd be like, fuck this, we're going home.
Exactly. Yeah. And he went in the next day too. He was like, got back on the horse.
That's why you always need a guy with you if you're swimming with jellyfish, because much harder if it's just ladies and you need someone to pee on you.
Exactly. It is. It's true. Good point.
If for no other reason.
Good point.
Just have like...
Meanwhile, I was like, why can't you pee into a thing and then pour it on your arm? I don't know. I didn't understand why someone else had to pee on you anyway.
No, it's got to come right from the source.
Exactly. Can it not be your own pee? I don't know.
I think that was just made up by islanders who just had a weird golden showers fetish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if they say it works.
That isn't. I mean, no judgment, but that is an odd fetish.
All the judgment.
That's pretty badass. I don't.
No, it's still not. It's not even close to the weirdest fetish, but it's.
No, there are many more. But
they're all odd, really.
I think I'm just. You know, when I see all the fetishes out there, and I think I'm just a pretty boring guy. I'm like, I don't get the.
I have a joke. Yeah,
sex is pretty fun by itself.
You don't have to
throw pee into the mixing bowl.
I haven't done it in a while, but I used to have this bit about fetishes, and then I would end it by saying I lucked out because my fetish is fully clothed, average-looking women.
that does seem like a good.
It's great, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Jonah has that great bit
that's
about.
That's funny because that's mine too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's crazy. Did you just realize that?
Little did you know.
Jonah's got that great bit about we're coming home and then masturbating, and then the dogs break in the room right as he's finishing, yeah. And then he's worried that that's going to create a fetish that he didn't know he had. So every time he dates a girl, he's got to ask. We're like, oh, do you have any dogs?
Don't you feel like people, though, who have animals, generally, if you have, like, you know, recently I have a dog that I take everywhere with me. She's a little dog. And she's, like, been on set since, like, I did the first Spy Kids. Like, she's been on for many years. My boyfriend and I moved to New York predominantly at the moment. And we don't have anyone there to watch her that we trust enough because I'm kind of obsessed sure. with whoever watches her. And so basically she's been traveling everywhere with us. And the other day he jokingly / not so jokingly was like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to have sex again without her watching. Because like it's become like now we're in a threesome.
Well, that's why you can FaceTime the pet. Just set your iPhone up by the pet.
Teach it how to nuzzle exactly. the button that says accept.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. A dog's nose could activate a capacitive yeah. touchscreen, yeah. right? It just needs organic material to break the field. Yeah, that's I guarantee that's been done.
I mean,
it's rule 34.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not familiar with the internet, rule 34 is essentially any disgusting thing you can think of, there is a website for it.
Are you being serious?
Dead serious.
How do I find these rules?
Well, I don't know. They sort of just exist in the digital ether. And they just hit you in the face.
I really need your help. I really do.
I'm happy to, like, stuck
in the Stone Ages.
I'm happy to nerd coach you, whatever you need. And then Matt can tell you how to reset your iPhone in glorious ways.
Excellent.
You just hold the home
run. Are you still riding on your high from Gordon Ramsay?
Yeah, it's really great, you guys.
I was wondering why your face is in your phone the whole time. And you were just Twitter flirting with Gordon Ramsay.
I was dealing with work stuff.
Sure.
Because I normally would be upstairs right now working.
Yeah.
But, and then my phone lit up with Gordon
Ramsay.
Why
would you not be here with us at this moment? Normally.
Well, because I work on a show on G4, which is in this building.
Have you done Attack of the Show before?
I haven't.
Okay, Attack of the Show is sort of it's like a daily nerd news wrap-up show.
No, I know the show, but I have never been.
That is a travesty!
I know! Come on.
We could very
Sally Jupiter needs to be on.
Wait a minute. Come on already.
The fuck?
What's happening?
Listen, you might get a call in a couple days. Well, your people will. I was doing that. And then Gordon Ramsay, it lit up on my phone. Because anytime anybody I'm following mentions me.
Sure.
That's the only like activation I have, that alert.
And so I'm sure your first thought was, surely Gordon Ramsay couldn't be following me.
No. I was like, well, he's not following me. And he just called me fat man.
Does he follow?
Are you obsessed with chefs or just him in particular?
Well, I think I enjoy a lot of the Food Network's programming.
Right.
And he's not on the Food Network, but
Matt will just go to Vegas just to go to a Gordon Ramsay restaurant.
I am kind of obsessed with great chefs because they are amazing.
Yeah, they are. And their food's good. Bobby Flay is great.
Yeah.
That's
I know who Bobby Flay is.
The guys who own Animal were here in the building today.
They're cool.
Oh yeah,
what's the seafood one that they have as well?
Son
of a Gun is great, except for it is so loud that it sounds like it's so loud. I'm so old, but it's so loud. But their shrimp toast and their fried chicken sandwich is out of control.
I don't know what I'd get at Animal anymore. I used to get the foie gras all the time.
What's wrong with that?
It's illegal now.
It is?
Yeah, in California.
Goose liver pate is illegal?
Yeah.
That's good. It's kind of, it's gross.
It's for delicious. It's for the animals, the way they are treated.
Yeah.
I do.
I'm fine with that.
Whatever. Foie gras, I gotta admit. But I do, I mean, you know, I can't really argue against their point because
it's kind of nasty.
Terrible for the animals.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it. Whatever.
All right. Let's just.
But anyway, so
sad.
Yeah.
No.
Anyway, so I like.
Let's just take a minute for a second to remember all the geese who gave their lives to Matt's foie gras.
Well, I mean, it's not every day I'm eating foie gras, but once in a while, it's a nice thing.
Should we write a We Are the World-style song for the geese?
You can, and I won't listen to it.
And we'll call it Honk If You're Hungry.
I get it, because the geese honk.
Should be much better mood than you are since Gordon Ramsay.
What are you talking about?
Since your new online boyfriend, Gordon Ramsay.
Every once in a while, these things happen.
I kind of feel glad that I was just here for the moment.
You were.
Yeah.
I'm just glad you explained the moment so it didn't seem like.
Yeah, no, I needed to let everyone know.
So how soon before you DM Gordon Ramsay and be like, hey, will you come on my podcast?
We're going to flirt back and forth for another month or two, you know.
Just like lay the groundwork.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, hey, Hell's Kitchen season 11 shooting is wrapping up pretty soon. Why don't you come on the podcast and promote it?
Matt, I just need some space.
No, no, Gordon.
Are we going to act it out together so you can rehearse? I wish, Carla, I wish you could come on the podcast every week.
You're awesome. I know you say that to everybody.
I don't say that to everybody.
He really doesn't.
I do.
I really don't say that to everybody.
Well, I appreciate it. I would love to come on the podcast every
Sometimes
week.
Sometimes he takes his headphones off, rubs his eyes, and goes, Jesus.
I've never done that.
Sure you haven't.
No.
Well, granted, that's after Hostful.
But I'm excited to go watch Craig Ferguson now just for because I didn't know we were on it together. This is why it's better when you get to sit on the couch together because then...
Yeah.
But that was also, it was also the last show in
the old studio.
In the old studio.
Yeah.
Which he seemed to be feeling slightly emotional about.
Well, it was,
It is kind of, space is a lot, like where you created, where something started.
Yeah.
I would think it would be weird to, you know, move.
And also if you're any kind of a performer, you obviously are going to be like, maybe the show worked because it was in that space.
I know. We're also superstitious.
Absolutely. But also as a comic, you know that certain floor plans and certain room sizes work better for comedy.
Well, for sure. I know that too about comedy for sure. But also like theaters in New York. Even if you're not doing a comedy, it's like there are certain spaces. There's certain Broadway spaces that work so much better than others.
Yep.
And no matter how much you do to project to this and that, it's like it just falls on depth. It's just not the same. It's weird.
You are East Coast based, correct?
Right now I am. Yeah, I've been like back and forth, really officially back and forth between LA and New York for the last 15 years. But right now right now it's the first time in since I was 14 that I don't actually have a home in LA.
Oh shit!
I know, it's really weird. It's actually very strange.
Oh my
god!
You can stay at my place. I have an empty. Better.
You're really awesome.
It's not far from here.
Matt will just really have awesome. To move his weird, massive guitar collection out of the way.
Yeah, I'll pull 14 guitars out of a room for you.
Maybe you could teach me to play the guitar as well while you're helping
you
me
left-handed?
With the iPhone. No.
Well, that's going to be a problem.
But I'm not good with the right hand with the guitar either, so I could just learn left-handed.
All right, perfect.
I don't have any. There's nothing. I haven't made any progress yet with the other hands.
So we're gonna nerd you up a little bit. Just give you some... We'll school you on some internet stuff. First of all, you just need to go to Reddit, reddit.com. Just start there.
IT.
Did I say D?
Yeah.
REDDIT.
I can't even spell clearly because that sounded like it was a T.
Reddit.
Okay.
Go to reddit.com. And then that'll start giving you a map of what is actually happening on the internet.
Okay.
It's good. And you will fall into, hours will disappear from your life as you go down the rabbit hole.
Fantastic.
I've read it.
I'm going to do that immediately.
And we'll have you back on whenever you want. Is there anything you want to promote?
You know what I would say?
Well, political animals.
I was going to say, I actually feel super passionate about that. I really, really love doing this show. And Greg Berlanti, who wrote it, is just an awesome writer. And the Sigourney Weaver is incredible. And Ellen Burstyn, who's like the most stunning. Obviously, she's a phenomenal actress, but she's like the most stunning almost 80-year-old woman you've ever seen, but not even like she's stunning for that age. She's just one of the most amazing people on the planet, and if I could ever be remotely as cool as her at any point, I'd be so happy. Kieran Hines, who's incredible, and anyway, Sebastian Stan. It's just a great, amazing actors. Dan Futterman, who you probably know from around and about. I don't know if you... He's been...
That name sounds really familiar.
As long as we have. He wrote also, he's a really good actor, but he wrote Capote and got nominated for Academy Award for it, and now he's sort of writing a bunch of stuff as well, but he plays my boyfriend on the show and my editor at the newspaper. But what I want to say...
Can I just imagine that this is a Spin City spinoff?
I know,
character?
Right? Exactly. And finally, I get to go. I don't have to just be at home in my apartment. But what I was going to say is that what's interesting about this show is that it's gotten a lot of really amazing response, and I haven't been involved in something in a while that people have been so passionate about, being like, I'm addicted, I'm hooked, I'm like, all these things. And it's also just kind of delicious because it's smart, but it's also a soap in the best, like in the best sense of that word, in the sense that, you know, sort of it really keeps you, every time every script would come, I couldn't wait to see what happened. But it's also got, it needs more people to watch it, because if it were on HBO or FX or
it's AMC, on USA, right?
It's on USA, which gets
characters
really big
welcome.
Numbers.
Yeah.
But this is a show that's much more like they were really excited to have a show that's sort of much they wanted something that was different. And
that's not Burn Notice, basically.
The rest of the shows are blue sky shows where at the end of the day.
It's just a different, exactly. It's a totally.
Everything worked out.
So
way to go, psych.
And so, you know, so we are in great position if we were on any other kind of thing. But in this one, they're just used to really huge numbers. So that is something I actually feel. I'm like, I literally can't remember the last time I've done this where I'm like, watch the show. It's so awesome. I do feel that way.
It's kind of a mini series, right?
It's a mini series. And actually this coming Sunday is the last of the six.
Okay.
And you know, there's a chance we could have a longer life for it. There's definitely a lot to explore, or it could just be this six. And, but that I love. And then the other thing that down the road, which maybe there's some really fun people in it. So maybe can you accommodate more than one person at a time?
Sure.
I really do that. There's a really cool movie that we shot for no money, really no money, in 15 days called Hotel Noir. It's a black and white film noir, period noir. We shot it down at the Biltmore Hotel.
Oh.
And it's with Danny DeVito and myself and Rufus Sewell and Rosario Dawson and Kevin Connolly and Malin Ackerman and Robert Forster, and
I will have all of those people on.
It'll come out in October. It'll come out this fall, but I play a singer in it, and it's a really cool classic. Like if you put it in time capsule, you'd think it actually came out in 1959.
The Biltmore.
That's awesome.
That place is
for the Sedgwick in Ghostbusters.
It did?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the interiors?
I didn't know
the exterior. When they pull up, they're pulling up to the Biltmore.
Oh, are they really? Because I found the hotel. It's like on Central Park. It's right on Central Park.
You found the inside of the hotel.
I thought I found the outside of the hotel.
Well, maybe you found it. One of the two.
I think it's more likely they shot the interiors at the Biltmore and the exterior in New York because, and I'm going out on a limb here.
Yeah.
New York does not look like Los Angeles.
No. So. Someone should tell CSI New York to get the fuck out of LA. Have you guys like just happened to see that show? It was
all
on
I'm
a
saying
bar.
Is New York has a lot of great palm trees.
It was on in a bar on mute, and I just could not fathom what I was seeing. Just like there's little.
Well,
to
that's hard
any
to believe.
Care.
You know, you would think that the target demo of CSI are detectives in their own right, and would probably notice such geographical inconsistencies.
Oh, it's awful.
But the Biltmore is so cool. I mean, because that's where the Academy Awards used to be.
Yeah, it's fucking awesome.
And it's just such a... I feel like it's haunted, too.
It probably is haunted, and it's just always nice because
both were like, yeah, ghosts.
Probably haunted.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Probably. I mean, of course.
Right, well, there's hundreds of ghosts in here right now.
Yeah, it's just... There goes Talk Soon.
Steve Kometko.
Wait a minute.
Jules!
Well, guys...
Thank you for being here.
Fantastic. I'm so glad.
You're not on Twitter or anything, are you?
I'm not.
Okay.
Well, if you were, we could be following each other. And then I'd be like, hey, Gordon Ramsay, check out this cool chick.
Yep.
And then he'd be like, followed. And then you wouldn't have to go through what I went through.
It might be a lot of work. For someone in your position, it might be a little bit of work.
My problem is I also feel like if I do something, I want to do it right.
Right.
And I feel like I wouldn't want to like not be following it consistently. And I really do. I don't understand how you guys, and you guys are really busy. How do you... get your emails, get your texts, answer your phone messages, and also do your Twitter. Like, I just don't know how I could have time.
Twitter is not something you set out to go do, at least. I always explained it as it sort of grouts your time in between the tiles of the other things in your life.
You are so, I'm so open to, I should just do it.
Let's just do it.
Let's just do it. I mean, really.
Someone's probably...
enough energy talking about not doing it.
Someone's definitely parked your name on Twitter. I'm almost positive.
Gordon Ramsay update.
What's happening?
Did he just message you again?
He was just... he just said, I was talking about me being a fat man. And he thought
what
it was
is
hilarious.
Going on?
He thought it was hilarious
the romantic...
That,
would you
said,
guys just fucking
glad,
get it over
he's
with?
Glad that I enjoyed the restaurant.
Oh, my gosh.
Because there's a scene in Hotel Hell, which is Gordon Ramsay's new show.
Oh,
I
don't
care. Last night, where like he pulls out a suitcase, and like he's gonna get down to work, and he takes out his chef's jacket, and then he puts on the chef's jacket, and it was like watching Batman get suited up.
Except not.
Except yeah, Gordon Ramsay's real. And Batman's not.
Shut up, you fucking asshole! Batman's real. Batman's really gonna save us. He's going to save
us. We don't live in Gotham.
All right, Carla, it is lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being here. And hopefully we'll see you again soon.
We'd love that. Thank you so much.
Enjoy your burrito, everybody.
Thank you.
Everybody, I can't reach the button. Ugh.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.